Talofa Lava, this is Pacific Waves from RNZ Pacific. I'm Susana Suisui-Ki. Coming up,
this is way better than trying to treat them after people have become sick.
Prevention is better than a cure with winter looming. Also,
you know, we're Pacific Islanders that work in the ministry space and we're here to support.
A program is helping Pacifica parents champion their children's education. And PNG community members say the latest gold plan is a risky move. An immunologist says COVID-19 continues to have unequal impacts on Pacifica communities in New Zealand. People are being urged to get vaccinated, wear masks and use antiviral medications following an increase in the number of cases in Aotearoa over the past 2 weeks. Alicia Froon spoke with immunologist Dr. Diane Sikabautonu about the importance of prevention ahead of winter.
I think it's important for us all to remember that here in Aotearoa, New Zealand, we are heading into the winter months and COVID is still here with us, and that the underreporting of COVID-19 has continued. And of course, this is no surprise to us now, but it still is a concern. The other key thing to bear in mind is that COVID has unequal or disproportionate impact, and that we know and we have seen that COVID has exacerbated pre-existing health inequities for different groups, and this also includes for Pacifica peoples and also for Māori, and that from time to time these inequities have come to the fore. For example, hospitalisations for Pacific peoples and for Māori for a time had been higher than for other groups. And so again, just coming back to bearing in mind that COVID does have an unequal impact. The other thing for us all to bear in mind also is that new variants of the SARS-CoV-2 virus do continue to emerge, and that currently here in Aotearoa, New Zealand, JN1 is responsible for the majority of COVID-19 cases. So we know that the virus is changing all the time, and that these new variants do continue to appear, and that these newer versions of the virus have caused a lot of problems with higher transmissibility. And so JN1 is one of these newer members of the Omicron family. And perhaps maybe just if this is helpful, Alicia, that JN1 carries a very high number of mutations on the spike protein. And so remember, the spike protein is how the SARS-CoV-2 virus gets into our cells and causes COVID-19. And so it's important to know that that there are very simple and straightforward steps that we can all take moving forward to help prevent COVID, but also that these prevention steps for COVID also help prevent other illnesses as well. And so, of course, bearing in mind that we are moving into the winter months, that the spread of other seasonal illnesses is also important to bear in mind. So wanting to minimise transmission remains important. And again, just coming back to the really simple steps that can be taken to manage and prevent COVID-19. And so, for example, we've all seen how COVID-19 vaccines, boosters, tests, masks and antiviral medications are all really important for managing but also dealing with COVID-19.
Can we talk a bit more about prevention as well? Here in Aotearoa, New Zealand, we no longer have to isolate. I guess there's now a lot more of a relaxed approach. However, COVID is still very much impacting people. We're seeing this in the evidence of the number of cases and even the number of deaths that are still happening. Could you talk about what we can do in terms of vaccines and boosters and also just reiterate those important messages to prevent the spread?
We're needing to minimise transmission of COVID, and this remains really important. And the steps that we can all undertake are really simple, and they are ones that we've all been doing to try and manage with COVID-19. And this includes COVID-19 vaccines, COVID-19 boosters, testing for COVID, having access to masks, but also antiviral medications are all really important for helping prevent but also manage COVID-19 moving forward. So although COVID has been a key focus for all of us over the past years, it's really important that all vaccines are still important. And it's important to remember also that cost remains a significant barrier for many here in Aotearoa New Zealand, and that it's key that people get access to what they need at the time that they need it. So we all know that prevention is better than cure. So if we can prevent people getting sick, this is way better than trying to treat them after people have become sick. We can't afford to have people getting sick if we can prevent sickness in the first instance, and people can't afford to become unwell either. And it really doesn't make sense that if we can prevent illness in the first instance, that we should be able to try and do that. Businesses, schools and workplaces can't afford to have people off sick as well. So in other words, preventing an illness is much better and cheaper than trying to treat people after they've become sick. It actually makes sense. It makes perfect sense to do everything that we can to stop people getting sick in the first place.
New Zealand's Ministry of Education is rolling out a program supporting youth of diverse backgrounds in navigating their schooling. Talanoa Ako is a Pacific Parents Education program that aims to help parents, families and communities increase their knowledge and confidence to champion their children's education. Tiana Haxton spoke to Pacific Senior Education Advisor Darius Abulu to learn more.
Ako sessions or learning hubs are held all across Aotearoa to help families understand and make informed decisions for their children's education. Mr. Apulu says the Pacifica community will greatly benefit from this program.
This is to be able to build a relationship or seem more welcoming to the community, because, you know, we're Pacific Islanders that work in the ministry space, and we're here to support. But yeah, just to build up that relationship with the community is the main thing.
The Talanoa Ako program runs over 10 sessions and covers the basic of how NCEA works through to career pathways and tertiary education opportunities. It caters to all ages and also embraces cultural diversity and encourages young ones to learn more about their heritage.
A couple of the resources that we have are like dual language books and that, aimed at different ages. It's nice to have them come in and enjoy looking at books. And one of them was, just around Samoan myths and legends and heroes and that kind of thing. And it's nice for younger children to be able to feel that way about seeing their culture and be excited about it. So yeah.
Community members and knowledge holders are also invited to join the Ako sessions.
Sometimes you'll get elders in to, share about the culture from that perspective. Yeah, I guess so that those perspectives are not lost, and so that the different age groups that we have across in the education space, whether it's teachers or students, are able to, understand, and I guess Talanoa to discuss the culture that we have.
Mr. Apulu says having more families involved with the Talanoa Ako initiative will help their children thrive in their educational journey.
For the past several years, the Papua New Guinea government has been talking about adding value to the country's gold production by establishing a refinery. It has revealed little about the plans, but there is legislation now before Parliament that would authorise a Singaporean-Australian business to set up and manage the refinery. There's been a lot of criticism of the plan from communities and from the Chamber of Resources and Energy, which says it risks undermining a key part of the country's otherwise fragile economy. And the executive director at the PNG Institutes of National Affairs, Paul Barker, is furious about the scheme. He spoke with Don Wiseman.
The government has this National Gold Corporation Bill. What's it trying to achieve with it?
That's a very good question. Its stated aims are to try and achieve greater value added for PNG out of the gold sector, feeling that the gold all departs the country and that we're not getting accumulating foreign exchange reserves and the benefits to the extent that PNG might be able to gain if it was doing some both processing and then ostensibly storing it and building up a PNG gold reserve. That seems to be the general gist of what they have in mind.
This company that they're working with, Refinery Holdings from Singapore, they are to build a refinery. Is that right?
That's ostensibly the case. Not just the refinery, the agreement, which is a very substantial document with 50, 60 pages of small print. It allows them to basically run an army, import weapons, and control a mint.
Run an army? Seriously?
Yeah, they can bring in and run a sort of like a military security operation, and they can ad hoc import weapons to service it, presumably all to protect the gold reserves that they're going to have and the mint, which they seem to think is going to be bigger than the Canadian, or at least as big as the Canadian and the Western Australian mint.
There are a large number of gold producers in the country, and if operations such as the Panguna mine get back off the ground, there'll be a whole lot more. And they're not going to be happy with this, are they?
No, because it basically gives the control over the whole processing and exporting of gold to this one monopoly. And they may choose not to export because they may decide that they want to retain it and to mint gold coins. I think, you know, some people think that we should be going back to the gold standard or something. But no, they're going to be very unhappy. And you don't actually make a lot of money out of the refining of gold. But if you have a monopoly and you're controlling the gold trade, yeah, you can make a lot of money out of that. And that seems to be what they have in line. But in the agreement, and the company involved seems to sort of be involved or claims to be involved with lending money to governments or securing funds for governments that are unable to meet requirements from international financial institutions to be able to borrow money and secure money for these other purposes. It's all very reminiscent of the 1990s when oil started being produced in PNG, when we had all the spivs and con men arriving in PNG. We had some rather exotic. There was a supposed Ethiopian princess who wanted to take over the Lihir mine. We had all these others who were promising hundreds of millions and sometimes hundreds of billions of funds from Saudi royal family sources, from all kinds of other bizarre sources. And yet, in the 1990s, we used to check, when I was working in government, we used to check a load of these companies out. We'd check out. They would claim to be in the top floor of an office building in the Gold Coast, and they weren't there. Or they would be in a building in Hong Kong, and we would have someone visit it from the Hong Kong police. And we would then discover, no, they're not there. But the next day, they were there. That would be a new office that would suddenly be set up in that premises. So these are the sort of guys who, in the 1990s, did their best to cream off the resource wealth or the apparent resource wealth in PNG. They roam around the Pacific. You sometimes have some of them appearing when they don't make it in PNG. You'll see them in the Solomon Islands. You'll see them in Tonga and various places. Of course, Tonga had the court jester who cleaned out their country's revenue. But you see them hovering around. And it takes a lot of money and effort to go and examine each of these different schemes or scams. You would think that by now, nearly 40 years after independence, PNG would be in a better place to actually screen these, to provide wise advice from the Treasury and Central Bank to caution against this sort of thing.
So we've got this company from Singapore.
Singapore with some Australian principals. Yeah, there's an entity from Australia. I think there's an entity that's based out of Melbourne. But
well, we can't necessarily call them shysters, can we? At this point, anyway, they are a legitimate company with a legitimate plan, and if they're taking in the government,
they have a 200,000 capitalization and they're wanting to be handling billions, so one would really be a little concerned. And then if you look at the document and the free rein this entity is being given over PNG's resources, that is extraordinary. And it really is, as I say, it's reminiscent of the 1990s characters that we used to have knocking on the door on a constant basis. And as I say, it cost a lot of money to go and check these entities out. And many of them were just these paper entities or entities that had no... I remember one of them that was then telling me, oh, look, if you want to check out my credentials, ring up Tommy Soeharto in Indonesia. I said, oh, sure, I'll do that. I'll pull back here. Is that Tommy? Yeah, I'd like to check out whether this company is a really bona fide company. We had dozens of these things, and the exercise was basically barring the door to them. This yeah. one looks very similar in many respects, although they certainly have some lawyers up their sleeve to write out very long and detailed project agreements.
All right. So an organization like the Institute of National Affairs would be hoping that this doesn't get any further along the line.
Absolutely. It really damages PNG's credibility. It will certainly frighten off major investors in the resources sector, which are already pretty scared by law and order issues and uncertainty over a range of policies and so on. We already closed the Porgera mine for some years, which at the time when gold prices were really at a peak, and we lost out nearly 3 and a bit years of production and revenue and foreign exchange out of that process. You know, we've got a very uncertain resource situation with the potential Papua LNG at the moment. We don't know quite where that one's going. And really, the government would do well to try and take a step back and focus on what government's priorities are or what they should be dealing with PNG's atrocious health situation. We have some of the worst health indicators in the world. I think it's the worst immunization rates, the third worst access to health services, according to WHO and so on. Education system, which is pretty basic. And if they could focus on that and having standard, consistent, sound taxation arrangements, rather than trying to take over all the functions of the private sector, which government is no good at, then PNG might actually start getting revenue, create some investment stability, and go places. Whereas at the moment, everyone's really throwing their hands and saying, where is PNG going?
That's Pacific Ways for today. To listen back, head over to rnzi.com/programs. We're also on Spotify, Apple, and iHeartRadio. From myself and the RNZ Pacific team, so far, so far.